This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder in International Relations. Professor, the news about Xi Jinping is that Joe Biden is now expressing, while in London, 60 Minutes recorded beforehand, that he warned Xi Jinping in March that it would be, quote, gigantic mistake if he were to aid Vladimir Putin. We've already discussed what Xi has or has not done. He's given lots of money in trade, but no bullets. However, the remark by Mr. Biden also continued in this 60 Minutes broadcast. All we have is excerpts that he warned don't to Vladimir Putin about nuclear weapons. So this raises a question. Mr. Biden warns Xi not what not to do. Mr. Biden warns Mr. Putin what not to do. What does Mr. Biden want? What does he want people to, for Putin and Xi and the other actors in the Ukraine-European conflict, what does he want?
Well, this is, to coin a phrase, a riddle wrapped in a mystery, enclosed in an enigma. I don't have a clear idea of what Mr. Biden wants, but I would point out that his ambitions, I believe, are domestic. He wants to be president of the United States. He wants the Democratic Party, his party, to control the Congress. He wants to be able to pass laws, appoint justices, and so forth. And it's worth noticing that American politics right now is not very much dominated. It's not dominated at all. It's little shadowed by the issue of the war in Ukraine. We have actually gotten a great deal of success, more success, I think, than we expected, from our role, which has been carefully circumscribed in helping the Ukrainians. And as long as there are not Americans being killed and the war continues to be confined to Ukraine, I think that that will be acceptable politically. Indeed, it will be a plus for Mr. Biden because it will show that he's tough, that he doesn't back down to bullying, that he keeps his word, and that the United States, under his leadership, is a strong and well-equipped military power and has lots of allies. And to be fair to him, he has done a great deal to, or he has done quite a bit to create and strengthen alliances east and west. But you mentioned first Putin's very baffling and worrying comments about nuclear weapons. You know, and I've said many times, I don't believe that nuclear weapons are war-fighting weapons. They simply don't help you to win. The fact that we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and then the Japanese surrendered a few days later is often thought to indicate that somehow a nuclear war or nuclear weapons end wars just by virtue of their being nuclear. But no. That war ended then because the use of nuclear weapons baffled the Japanese, and it led to a political change in Tokyo, which made it then possible for the anti-war people, for the emperor in particular, to say to the Japanese military, if we don't know what it, even know what it is, perhaps we shouldn't be fighting these people. Putin could use two kinds of weapons of mass destruction, or three. He could use gas. He could use tactical nuclear weapons. I think those are rather unlikely. The third, that he has already used We think he's already used it in Ukraine once, his so-called thermobaric weapon, a fuel-air explosive. And the place where that would be attractive, what a fuel-air explosive is just a cloud of gasoline, basically. It's a fog of gasoline, which, if ignited, produces an explosion comparable to that of a nuclear weapon. It doesn't give much shock, so it doesn't break buildings. But right now, the Ukrainians are surrounding the Russians in Donetsk and Luhansk, and they have miles and miles of deep slit trenches, which are very, very hard to hit with artillery or rockets or anything. However, a thermobaric weapon above such trench lines would kill everybody in them. And that, I don't think, would win the war for Putin, but it would be an extraordinary change. What we would do, I don't know. We have better thermobaric weapons than the Russians do, but that's really neither here nor there. I don't think we should use them. I think that Biden is hoping that somehow this war is going to sort of go away by itself, that there's going to be a point at which both sides come to him and say, why don't you be Woodrow Wilson at Versailles, or why doesn't Mr. Blinken be Woodrow Wilson at Versailles, and help us to come up with a compromise, a territorial compromise and a political compromise, which will enable Russia and Ukraine to live in peace together. That, I think, has that idea that this was the way the war is going to end has guided American policy. We didn't expect them to win as dramatically as they have in the last several days. And this is making our calculation very difficult, because in a territorial settlement, I think the conventional wisdom in Washington and in the White House was that Russia would keep Crimea. It now looks as if Kherson and Mariupol and so forth are going to fall fairly soon, in which case it will not be difficult for the Ukrainians to deoccupy Crimea, in which case Ukraine would control a vast amount of territory and Russia would really have very little leverage in negotiations. The other way that I don't know what Biden thinks about this, but he has been very, very cautious about what weapons he supplies to Ukraine. So several months ago, he wouldn't allow them to have, I think, MiG-29 fighters, which are not Top Gun by any means. But he was afraid that was going to lead to escalation. I think Mr. Biden, although he's unclear about what he really wants, he certainly doesn't want World War III, and he thinks that World War III is going to be caused by the introduction of a weapon rather than by a series of demands which cannot be answered. So the thing that we could do, that Mr. Biden could do, that would end the war would be to start cutting down on our supplies to Ukraine, talk to Russia and say, can you start supplying gas to our European allies in proportion to the degree to which we reduce supplies to Ukraine, and then begin to pressure Mr. Zelensky and the other Ukrainians who have done far better than we expected them to do, pressure them to come to some sort of settlement with Russia. There are two questions about this. One is whether that's actually legal. In other words, we subscribe to certain principles in the UN Charter and so forth, and it's not clear that without UN sanctions, one can simply step into a country which has been invaded and then preside over an international settlement which violates what the UN recognizes as the territorial integrity of that country. The second point, of course, is that if Mr. Biden wants his party to do well in the upcoming elections, having almost won in the Ukraine and then turning around and saying, well, now it's time for us to start putting the pressure on Kiev to get real and settle with the Russians, because, in parenthesis, we all know that Russia is far more important in the long run than Ukraine, close parenthesis, that to do that, it seems to me, would be a terrible political mistake. And as a footnote, would also be a terrible geopolitical mistake.
Your measure, then, the president wants it to go on as it is, neither hot nor cold, just probably favoring Ukraine at the moment, but long-term unknown. That pleases the White House?
Well, I think that it is satisfactory for the White House because it does not create a political issue in the United States. However, it provides no answer, and in fact, the Biden administration has in fact provided no concrete answer to the question of when does this end? How is this conflict going to be terminated? After all, sometime long ago, there was something called the 100 Years War, and there was a 30 Years War. Wars have a way of going on longer than you think, unless something changes that stops them from going on. Furthermore, they have a tendency, as they protract, also to escalate and become more violent, more destructive, and most dangerously of all, to spread. The answer we get from Washington is a diplomatic solution. And I think we've seen a trial balloon of what that diplomatic solution would look like in a recent article in Foreign Affairs, which is already out of date because it did not take into consideration that the Ukrainians were suddenly going to score a really what's going to be a victory that's studied by military historians. But simply to say diplomatic solution is not really to say anything. We would have, if we wanted to pursue that, to draw up proposals and then start trying them to sell them to the Russians and to the Ukrainians. And my own sense is that neither that Putin doesn't really believe he's lost and is not ready to come to terms, while the Ukrainians think that they're close to winning, although they are very cautious about saying it's going to be a long, long struggle. But they have astonished themselves. They've captured more Russian prisoners than they have room for in their detention camps. So this means that we would have a very difficult time bringing about a meeting of minds, a true meeting of minds between Kyiv and Moscow. And sadly, to end a war so that it doesn't flare up and start all over again because the underlying issues have not been resolved, to do that, you really do have to have such a meeting of minds. That's absent at the moment, and Washington does not have a proposal.
Professor H.A. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on the unknowns of what does Joe Biden want from Ukraine conflict, from the European challenge of getting through this winter and several more without adequate energy resources, either for people's homes or for prosperity. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com, featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards Program, eligible members save more. with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.